Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with Amber Collins. She is the owner of The Soul Book Nook in Waterloo, Iowa's newest independent bookstore, opening on Saturday, and likely the first Black-owned bookstore in the history of the state. But first, the experiences of being pregnant and giving birth are two of the most profound personal experiences a woman can have. They are also such common experiences that everyone has opinions about them and feels free to share those opinions, from the barista who sells you your morning coffee to the many politicians who are trying to regulate reproductive rights. Liz Lenz's new book, Belabored, A Vindication of the Rights of Pregnant Women, is part memoir, part history, and part manifesto. Liz Lenz is a columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. She is on the line with me now. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Charity. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And Liz, I have to say, this book kind of reads like the kind of primal scream you might hear in the hallway of a delivery ward of a hospital. So tell me, what prompted you to write it?
Thank you for saying that. I think that's exactly the feeling I was going for and exactly what I was feeling when I was writing it. This book came out of a series of essays I did for the website Jezebel right when my kids were very little. And I was writing about mythology and motherhood and just kind of the weird connections I was seeing, you know, between like what we conceive of mothers to be and who we actually are. And I had been trying to sell a very different book at the time. And one of the editors was like, well, we don't want this book that you're trying to sell, but we do like your essays that you've been writing for Jezebel. And so I put it together in a proposal, and then time passed. I sold it late 2016. And then by the time I sat down to write it, I was a very different person. I was now divorced. I was no longer upper middle class. And my experience of motherhood had changed all over again. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to just really kind of lay it all out there and say, this is what we're doing, not just to women in America, but to America at its core, because, you know, the uterus is the basis of our economy. So we can't ignore that.
For people who aren't familiar with your background, you grew up in a very conservative Christian evangelical family. And of course, reproductive, I guess, policy is part of that upbringing. You were given a promise ring when you were in high school, or not a promise ring, a purity ring when you were in high school, you know, promising to remain a virgin until you got married. So the way that you grew up and the way that you were shaped, which of course millions of Americans are brought up in this way, but that really shaped your early ideas of what it might mean to become pregnant and become a mother.
Yes, I, you know, not only did I grow up deep in purity culture, but I was one of eight children, and my parents would, you know, march us out to rallies protesting the Roe v. Wade decision. You know, we would all line up at the church, you know, during Right to Life Sunday. So I grew up in this world that I'm now pushing back against. And yes, it did shape my experience of what I thought was supposed to be a mother. Because even when I graduated from college and was like, okay, that's not my world. You know, I'm educated and I know better, that the process of being a mother just made me realize how those ideas aren't just something relegated to evangelical subculture in America, that our ideas about motherhood and our ideas about conception are really steeped in the world of purity. I think we're seeing that right now in this election, where our president is, you know, trying to trying to appeal to suburban white women and like telling them that, you know, their white babies are being endangered. And so there are these ideas about purity that begin with our conception of the female body. And they start with how we regulate who gets to have sex, when they get to have sex, and how it's okay to have sex. And then that continues forward, you know, into motherhood. You know, you've all seen those articles. It's like, now you're a mother, here's how to dress modestly. And it's like, how do you think I became a mom in the first place? It wasn't by being modest, that's for sure. So, you know, we're just steeped in these contradictions.
Well, let's talk about this sort of mythology of motherhood, because again, as you said, it goes far beyond the evangelical community. We do have sort of this cultural ideal of what it means to be a mother. And you argue in your book, and I think it's a strong argument, that it's also a very race-based ideal. The ideal mother in our culture is the white mother.
Yes. I mean, that's who we allow to be a mother. And that's not just my opinion. I mean, it is my opinion, but it's also a fact. I mean, we need to look at maternal mortality rates in America. You know, a Black mother is, I think it's somewhere between 3 to 6 times more likely to die in childbirth than a white woman. We're actively killing Black mothers in America. You know, we regulate who gets to adopt children. So we're actively regulating and denying LGBTQ persons the right to parent. You know, and there's this really great body of research that I quote in the book, but kind of belongs to the writer Virginia Soul Smith, who talks about how, you know, how we discriminate against fat women being mothers. Basically, you know, the ideal mother is that, you know, kind of blonde mom blogger with the perfect curls, which I've never been able to get. I have tried so hard to get those perfect curls, you know, like lined up with her bump in front of a chalkboard, just, you know, doing her little gender reveal. And we just, that's what we think of as a perfect mother, and we cannot get it out of our heads. And we need to, because this isn't just a horrible racist stereotype. It's killing women in America, and we need to stop.
You mentioned the mommy blog culture that has grown up, well, since blogs started, and you were part of that mommy blog culture. That was one of your first paid writing gigs in Iowa, right?
I mean, let's not get too crazy with the word paid. I was mildly compensated. But yes, I mean, you know, I moved here to Iowa in 2005, newly married. I couldn't get a job for the life of me. And then when I finally did get a job, I lost it in the flood and then the recession. And so I was trying to find a way to become a writer. And once I got pregnant with my first, I was just like, I was so frustrated because I felt like everything I wanted to say was being relegated to this niche, you know, which we sneeringly look down on. Not you, Charity, you don't. But so many people in our culture look down on as, you know, mommy blogs. And what I found there when I started, I was just like, fine, I'll make my own website. But what I found there was incredible community of women who are smart and talented, but because, you know, they happen to use their uterus once or twice, you know, to create a baby, that now we're like a mommy blog. And, you know, so this is a world I came a part of, but it's also, you know, it's also a world that is very steeped in the same problems that the rest of our culture is steeped in. So yes, I did write for the Eastern Real Moms of Eastern Iowa. And if you look around, I was on a billboard for a while too.
Well, and we featured a few of the bloggers from that blog on Talk of Iowa just a few years ago. Well, time
yes,
flies.
Yes, you did.
All right. So this culture of blogging, of talking about motherhood, I think that there is a dark side of it, but I also think that there is a light side of it as well. And of course, you know, and people are sharing ideas. There's so much more content available than there ever was before. You can find good, you can find bad, but it does feel like women are so much more empowered in motherhood than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and certainly 50 years ago and 100 years ago. Don't you feel like we're making progress?
Right now, in America, in our pandemic, we are experiencing when mothers are having more pressure on them than they ever have before. Mothers, the majority of mothers work full time and are spending more time now with their kids than they did in the 1970s. And now we're homeschooling. And now, you know, and study after study shows that if a job is going to get lost in this pandemic, it's the woman's. And if somebody has to take the hit to watch over the kids, it's the woman. Meantime, women and mothers are still doing the majority of the household chores. So when you say empowered, I wonder what you mean by that. I mean, because we are right now experiencing a crisis of American motherhood. You called my book A Primal Scream. There's so many mothers out there screaming for help that is not coming because we do not adequately fund childcare in America. We do not give maternity leave. Women still earn less than men. We're required to do more than we ever have been. Basically, with schools shutting, and women still working, the entire economy hinges upon our free unpaid labor. No, I don't think that that's empowerment. I think that that's oppression. But the difference is, and there actually, there's not even a lot of difference because the same things I'm saying, you know, sociologist Arlie Russell Hochschild was saying years and years ago, and she has a Guggenheim. And if people didn't listen to her, they're surely not going to listen to an idiot who makes jokes on Twitter. But, you know, I don't see empowerment. I see oppression.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I am talking with Liz Lenz. She is a columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. She is also the author of the new book, Belabored, A Vindication of the Rights of Pregnant Women. And we'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll meet Amber Collins. She's the owner of The Soul Book Nook in Waterloo. It's Iowa's newest independent bookstore, opening on Saturday. With me right now is Liz Lenz. She's a columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and she's also the author of the new book, Belabored, A Vindication of the Rights of Pregnant Women. The book is part memoir, part history, and part manifesto. And Liz, I was building up to where we are with this pandemic. The book was written pre-pandemic, but I do want to push back a little bit on what you're saying. I do not disagree that we're having a crisis right now in this country, and women are bearing the brunt of it. And of course, women of color more so than white women in our culture right now. But I do want to go back because, you know, I gave birth in 2005 and 2007. I had access to so much information, and I know that I am a woman of immense privilege in my education and the kinds of choices that I had. I was living in a large university town. But, you know, I was able to interview the providers and decide who I wanted to deliver my babies based on their philosophy and based on their cesarean section rates. And, you know, all of this information that really wasn't available. I think about the stories that my mother tells about her pregnancies and how her doctor mocked her for wanting to breastfeed. He made a joke and said, "My heifers breastfeed." You know, things had changed so dramatically in the 30 years between when my mom gave birth to me and when I gave birth. So it does feel like progress to me from that perspective?
Yeah, I think, you know, I am glad your experience was very empowering. And I think that that's the ideal. I hear from a lot of women who are like, oh, I feel so bad. I didn't have a bad birth experience. It's like, no, that's what we want. We want everybody to feel empowered with choices in the birthing process. And we want doctors and a medical establishment that gives women options. But I think the reality is, you know, there's still a lot of women out there who don't feel empowered in the birth process, who actually, you know, either come close to dying because their doctors were not listening to them. You know, there's Serena Williams, it's Tressie McMillan Cotton, who talks about it in her book, Thick. You know, and so that's, I think, the problem that I get at in my book is that while it might be better for some, it's not getting better for all. And the people who are suffering are largely women of color, and they're poorer people. And, you know, even in my birthing process, the first time I went in, I thought I knew everything. I thought I was going to do all this stuff. I'm type A. I research everything to the death. I go in, I have a very long labor, and have my baby have to get like vacuumed out of me, which I didn't want at all, but I was in so much pain. I was passing in and out. I had no idea what was going on. And then the next thing I know, you know, I'm lying in the bed. I have two doctors around me, and I'm watching somebody mop my blood off the floor. I have no idea what happened. And then later, trying to ask my doctor what happened, she would just say, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It wasn't until right before I gave birth to my second that I found out, you know, I had severe postpartum hemorrhaging, which is can be fatal. And nobody talked to me about it, you know. And so I still think we have a long way to go. And I think that's where we, if we feel empowered as women, that's where we need to start using our voices to make it so birth and the process of being a mother is empowering for all women, and not just for us if we're upper middle class and white and have options, because most people don't have that.
You write a lot about the history of childbirth. And of course, through history, there was a time when childbirth was a strictly female activity. Women were attended by midwives or by people in their family who had gone through this before. It was something that men wanted nothing to do with. And then with modern-ish medical science, the advent of that, of which was an entirely male field, then men got very involved with childbirth, although medical science took a very long time to start recognizing that the female body was different than the male body. And we still see studies that were done entirely on men because they don't want the hormones that women have to mess with the results, in spite of the fact that, of course, we'll also need to take those medications through time. Medical science is moving, maybe slowly, but it is moving and recognizing the needs of people who are not white men. I'm hearing you say there's no progress, but there is some progress. It is slow, though.
You know, I think one of the mistakes we make about medicine, I'm very pro, and I'm not trying to undermine medicine in any way. Vaccines are great. Please get them when they're available. That's my message. But I do think we make the mistake of thinking that medicine is not steeped in the culture that it comes from. And I think the more we understand that, which is why I wrote the book, the better we will be able to not just advocate for ourselves, but advocate for policies that make America a better place to be a mother. Again, we are one of the worst industrialized nations for maternal mortality outcomes. And that's a reality we cannot escape, but it's also a reality we're not doing anything about. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not trying to say medicine hasn't made some progress, but I don't think we can just sit here and say, well, we're empowered, job's done, wash our hands. Like, I think, you know, I think the reality is America's doing a pretty crap job and we're killing mothers. And I don't want us to ignore that and turn away from it because, you know, because wealthy white women were able to get maybe a midwife and then avoided a C-section. Like, progress, we need to demand better of progress in our country. And that's what I'm saying. And that we need to also understand, you know, the way that medicine is still kind of mired in mythology. When I was struggling so hard after my second baby and I had two kids and I was home and trying to work and crying and not sleeping, I remember going into my doctor and saying, I'm not okay. I don't feel good. I screamed at my kids. I think there's something wrong with me. And her pulling down like the whatever big medical book and just opening it up to antidepressants and breastfeeding and just be like, well, there's no studies, so you can take the risk if you want. I mean, just being like, what? You know, and I was too scared and exhausted. I didn't go on them. I wish I had, because there were some real rough moments in those early days that haunt me forever. And again, like, that's where I'm saying, as a nation, we have to do better. We cannot rest on our laurels. You know, again, we're a wealthy industrialized country and literally doing the worst at this.
I'm talking with Liz Lenz. Her most recent book is Belabored, A Vindication of the Rights of Pregnant Women. And let's talk politics, Liz, because, of course, it's not just the medical field that has a lot to do with birth and early motherhood in this country. But we do see politicians, of course, constantly wanting to regulate birth control, abortion, reproductive rights, all kinds of things. And one of the scariest things that we have seen in recent years, and I don't believe this is a political statement to say this, is that we've seen a lot of politicians making policy and even getting policy passed on the basis of facts that are false, things that are not real. I mean, you talk about the idea that an ectopic pregnancy can be re-implanted, which is not it's something so many women wish could happen, but it can't.
No, it can't. That's funny. It's facts that are false. I call them lies. I kind of cut to the chase. Yes, that there is a lot of policy being perpetuated based upon actual lies. This whole idea of like the you know, like the post birth abortion, that's something I get emailed all the time, where people are like, Democrats want abortions after birth. And it's like, what? The baby's already out. What do you think goes on? Like, what's going on? And it would be hilarious if it weren't actively killing women in America, because the more we base policy on, let's just say lies and spin, that the more we harm the very people we're setting out to help. And yes, there's a lot of laws in America that we pass based on lies. And we keep doing that here in Iowa. We keep passing unconstitutional laws that basically, you know, reach their arcade-like claws up into a woman's uterus and try to control it. And the courts have to be like, no, that's, you can't do that, and slapping them down. And yet we constantly waste time and energy passing these laws to get them slapped down. And all it's doing is making worse outcomes for reproductive care and just care for women in this state. I mean, we've seen maternity wards close. We're seeing rates of STDs go up. People, our abortion rate is rising because people cannot access reproductive health care in our state. And so these are the outcomes of playing politics based on straight up lies. Well, so we got to stop it.
Do you think sometimes, and I wonder, you know, there are times where I feel like a politician is straight up lying. There are times when I feel like it comes from a deep ignorance. And that's almost scarier to me, to think that these are beliefs that come from a sincere place, but are based on misinformation.
And of course, you know, I this is the world I grew up in, right? That the world that would really, really, really love to regulate a birth in America in a way that is not based on science. And at some point, I don't know what, I mean, we can do the emotional and intellectual labor of being like, well, they're a liar or they're dumb, but the outcome is still the same. And I really think that we are losing this argument in America, and we're losing this argument in America because we're wasting so much time trying to be like, well, they might believe that because no, it doesn't matter. We have to push back against this no matter how or where it comes from. And, you know, to be quite frank, at some point, ignorance is a choice. And, you know, if that's a choice you're going to make, well, then I will fight you at every level.
One of the vignettes in your book is a visit that you paid to the parents of Tara Westover. And Tara Westover is the author of Educated. It's her memoir about growing up with a survivalist Mormon family and what she had to overcome to be able to get an education and go to college. I'm curious, you know, and there are some echoes of how she grew up with how you grew up, and this community that you moved out of, and your family has also moved out of that community in some ways as well. But I'm curious, why did you want to visit her parents?
I, you know, it started as a magazine piece that just didn't end up being able to happen. An editor reached out to me and said, what story would you like to do? And I said, I want to go talk to these parents because I wanted that, you know, they were, I also had read about, you know, this essential oil business and the mother being a midwife. And I was very interested in origin stories and the idea of who gets to tell a story, like a creation story, and who gets to tell that about a family and who doesn't. I am number two of eight kids. I struggle. I'm the only writer, much to the, you know, detriment of my whole family, to whom I apologize, but not really apologize because I'm not going to stop. But they, you know, and so I know that telling a story about a complicated history is like, you know, trying to reflect light from broken glass, right? And the more siblings there are, the more broken the glass is. And I just was fascinated by this experience, and I wanted to talk to them. And I had reached out and just said, hey, I want to talk to you. Here's what I want to know. They didn't. And I said, if you don't reply, I won't follow up. You know, I'm not going to harass you. And then nothing happened. So I went on to do a different story for that outlet. It was a wonderful story about a mom blogging conference and monetizing motherhood. But then the family called me back and they were like, we prayed about it and you can come. And so I was like, so I just had to book a flight myself and go because I wasn't going to not have this experience. And then I went out there and ended up being a different story than what I thought. But I thought it fit in the book because, again, it's about who gets to own your life, who gets to own your story, the tussle between, you know, mothers and daughters and birth and creation, and the stories we tell about our origins, I think are also part of the motherhood experience in America. And it was a very intense, very intense 3 days.
We only have about a minute left, Liz. And for people who read your book, I can imagine for a lot of women, it would be a cathartic experience to read. And they would see a lot of themselves in what you've gone through as well. But what do you want people to take away from this book? Because as I mentioned, I mean, this is a primal scream. What do you want people to do once they scream along with you?
I want them to go out and advocate for policies that will help families of all types, mothers of all types, even if they don't choose to identify as a mother, trans people fit into that category too. I want to take, right now I feel the conversation about motherhood is, you know, oh God, to use a sports metaphor, sitting on the 50-yard line. And I just want my book to push it forward so that we can start making progress, so we can move beyond these stupid conversations about who owns the uterus and just start saying, okay, let's start helping mothers, actually helping mothers and families in America, because women are leaning in so hard they're falling off the cliff.
Liz Lenz, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
Liz Lenz, she is the author of Belabored, A Vindication of the Rights of Pregnant Women. She is also a columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Coming up in just a moment, the Soul Book Nook is a new independent bookstore opening up in Waterloo. We'll meet the owner. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.